What role does a user's behavior have on what we provide as a solution? And does it matter? Co-founder of Qcumber, Seb Rose, talks with us in Nashville at Agile 2022 on behavioral-driven development and the impact it can have on delivering what customers are really looking for, but not directly saying.
Unlocking Agile is brought to you by Scrum, Inc. The world of work is changing. We pioneered that change. From Fortune 100 companies to startups, nonprofit organizations, and government agencies, Scrum, Inc.'s team of consultants, trainers, and coaches partner with you to create self-sustaining Agile organizations. Training that empowers, transformations that work. Contact us at scruminc.com.
We'd like to welcome everybody to the latest episode of Unlocking Agile, brought to you by Scrum Inc. We are here in Nashville, Tennessee, at the Agile Education Booth for Agile 2022 in Nashville, and we are thrilled to have with us right now Seb Rose. Seb is been a developer since 1980, but he is the founder of Qcumber Limited. He's an author, he's a coach, he's a speaker, he's here at the conference with us. And Seb, thanks for being here.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Rob. I should say I'm one of the co-founders of Qcumber Limited. Yeah,
all right.
There are five of us. Yeah.
Nice. So one of the things that you do, we were standing here talking, you talk about behavior-driven development.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's something that people have heard about a lot. You don't see a tremendous amount of implementation, but people are curious. I think a lot of people are curious about how best they can implement something like that to develop better solutions and better products.
Mm-hmm.
Take us into that a little bit.
Yeah, so most people's exposure to behavior-driven development starts and finishes with Qcumber, right? They think of Qcumber as being a test automation tool.
Right,
and
yeah, that's what I always say.
Yeah, and although Qcumber is fine as a test automation tool, it really, that wasn't the intended purpose when Aslak Hevsoy created it. It was there to support behavior-driven development. And behavior-driven development, it consists of three practices. Discovery. So we've reused the word discovery, and I'll explain a little more in a second. Then formulation, and then finally automation. So discovery is where you collaborate. It's between your technical team, your testers, your developers, your security experts, your UX, and the business representatives, BAs or product owners or product managers. And during this discovery, we're doing discovery on a single story. Right? And the idea is so that everybody understands the story, everybody's learned about the assumptions that underpin it, everybody's really knows why we're doing this for the customer before we write any code. Before we write any test plans.
So including QA in the conversation up front?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, exactly.
Imagine.
So it's akin to the three amigos, right? So that's exactly where the inspiration came from. But it's much more structured and focused. We're doing it, three amigos on one story. And at the end of that, we expect either to know that there are questions left unanswered, which means this story is not ready to go into your backlog, your sprint backlog, or everyone's absolutely certain they've understood it. And this is shift left, shifted left all the way. We're going right back. We've actually learned everything we need to learn about this story before we start working on it. Our preferred way of doing discovery is using a technique called example mapping.
Okay.
There's loads of documentation online. On the Qcumber.io website, you'll find the seminal article by my colleague Matt Wynn called Introducing Example Mapping. It goes into detail. But the point is that each story, we'd say, you've got to understand what rules are going to be implemented by it. I.e., once this small increment has been delivered, what's going to change about the behavior of the system that you're building? And so we call these rules. Some people call them acceptance criteria. Some people call them business requirements. It's all these things. And so we use rules and look the purpose, exactly. And the example mapping technique invites the technical members of the team to challenge their own understanding of each rule by asking really focused questions of that rule using concrete examples. So, for instance, you know, if we say a store is going to have going to be open from 9 to 5 on weekdays, that's the rule. Well, someone might say, well, what about it's 25th of December and it's Tuesday? Does the store open at 9 o'clock? product owner probably goes, no, we're not going to be open on Christmas Day. And although that's a trivial example, these sort of exceptions are there in every system. You think through it. So you end up with these concrete examples, and you have multiple concrete examples illustrating each of those rules. You may discover rules that the product owner hadn't thought about to start with, so you actually fill in those gaps. You may surface assumptions that the product owner had, and now we're beginning to get to all those places that, you know, if you were a tester or a developer and you went away with a story as it is, you sit down and start doing work, first thing you end up doing is go, we never talked about that, I didn't ask about that in refinement. You have to context switch and go and ask. These concrete examples therefore help us see what the story actually is. It's a really good slicing technique, because if you end up with a story that you find has got a dozen rules, you can bet your bottom dollar that's not going to be deliverable in a day or two, right? So, and the nice thing is, because the rules are the business requirements, you can peel off two or three rules and pump it under another story. So it's a perfect way to split things, prioritize things, and it gives the product owner really fine granularity of prioritization control.
So that's also supporting the overall refinement process, and that is, so for the developers, and then we put a lot of emphasis on the product owners to do this slicing, right?
Yeah.
This is, you just part something that's kind of a sore spot for me,
right?
Is that we spend so much time saying, product owners, this is how you slice stories and things like that, and we put them in kind of a bubble of having to do it, and then criticize them when stories are too big.
Yeah.
But really, to be taking that load off, because they're doing something like you're describing, allowing the developers and the testers to look for those different areas.
Yes.
So it becomes a lot more obvious what needs to be sliced in the entire team that we're all doing.
Absolutely. I mean, for me, the person who pictorially showed it best was Jeff Patton with his asteroids metaphor. You know, we've already got the idea of epics and stories. I don't know who made that one up, but in reality, those stories are often, you know, they're often sprint size, and I've even heard people talking about them today saying, as long as it fits within a sprint, it's fine. And I just go, no, because then what you end up with is the stories, you know, five or six stories drop at the end of the sprint, if you're lucky, and then the testers have got to do all that testing before the sprint. It's hellish. So you want to drop continuously through, so you need to make them small, low risk. It's all lean manufacturing stuff, small batch size.
Well, I mean, it's okay if we go to, you know, a whole sprint doing a story. We'll just do a test sprint afterwards.
Yay! I like it. Yes, that's such a good idea. Maybe I'll change my mind about this.
don't get me started.
Okay. So these concrete examples, they pop out, and those concrete examples, they've done their job. We've shifted testing left. So we've tested our understanding. We've tested the product owner's understanding. We've tested the assumptions that underpin it.
Okay.
And now those can be formulated into Gherkin. Because in fact, an example is a perfect test case. It describes exactly how the system is supposed to behave in one specific situation.
Sure. So then how does that concept differ from TDD?
It doesn't. So essentially BDD and TDD, I mean, historically, BDD was created by Dan North in London. He was trying to teach developers test-driven development, and he discovered that as soon as you said the test word, developers went, oh, it's not for me then, is it? So he created a small tool that instead of talking about tests, talked about scenarios and behavior, BDD was born. It's moved on a long way from there, but the way we implement BDD, or the way we teach people to implement BDD, is you have an outer loop of behavior-driven development. You take your story, you do your example mapping, you then choose which of those examples you think are going to be critical to put, that are really interesting to the business owner. You formulate them into Gherkin, so given the preconditions when I try and do something, then this is the outcome, and then you automate it. So you write the automation scripts that underpin the words in the scenario. You run it. It fails, obviously, because you haven't done the work yet. And then you drop into an inner loop of TDD, where you're doing really detailed small micro specification tests within a developer loop. And you might have to write 5 or even 500 unit tests at that level before that scenario starts running, and then you do it again. You pick the next one from the story, and away to go. So it's BDD and TDD. The only real difference is who you're trying to communicate with. You don't want to ask your product owner to read your unit tests.
Of course, right.
But if he's interested, or he or she is interested in the behavior of a piece of the system, So one of the things that you find is that some people go overboard on the scenarios. So part of our training and coaching is what you should be, you should have your product owners not groaning when the scenarios drop in front of them. They should be waiting for them. It should be one of the things that they look forward to. So try and make them fun and snappy.
So that brings up a really good question. I mean, how do you keep the developers and the testers that are coming up with these things from accepting, you know, perfect is the enemy of God, right?
Yep.
How do you keep them from doing just enough to make sure that that thing does what it needs to, and not trying to identify, slowing it down through paralysis and analysis,
yep.
Right? Slowing it down and trying to, I'm still trying to make sure we got every single thing and storing it in the phone.
Yeah, so it's a question of practice, right? So there's no way you can stop people trying to do that, but what you can do is keep when in the early stages of learning and picking and implementing BDD, you can keep reinforcing the fact that this is not a testing activity about the code. This is a testing activity of, do we understand what we're intending to do? What is it that we want to deliver? So we don't, if you're doing shipping, piece of software, you don't have to test every country in the world and every state in the United States and every zip code, right? Because that's exhaustive. We're not trying to be exhaustive. We're trying to get to a place where you've got your 80-20 or 95-5. There's going to be very little that will slip through.
Sure. And I would think that what you're learning at a small level, just purely at a perspective, those same lessons are going to, the more you learn on the small things, will be continuously able to be applied with minor variations,
mm-hmm.
as you continue down that road, right?
Yeah.
And so that should get faster and easier, that whole learning process.
So there's a few things. So the teams that I work with, I typically find that I work with them very intensively for the first couple of weeks, and then I sit in on some of their example mapping sessions for another 2 to 3 months, and then you just let them fly. And then they come back and ask questions when something is uncertain.
So that ties into your coaching team.
Yeah.
You get your very specific and directive.
Yeah.
Eventually you become very consultative.
Yeah.
Then there's a speed.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fantastic.
And in fact, so yesterday, in fact, I had to take an hour out to do a call with my company. And unbeknownst to me, off screen, somewhere on the side, was one of the tech leads who I trained maybe 3 months ago. Although I was being there for people to ask me questions, at the end, she got up and described the change that example mapping had made to their whole team. I honestly didn't pay her anything, right? So it's
listening.
Yeah, they're listening. Yeah. So there's a lot of things that we teach that people really don't like, but example mapping is not one of them. Example mapping has, I have never been into a client and had them go, this sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And the trick to it is to keep the example mapping sessions short, right? So what we actually find is that what we have is 25 minutes time box. Yeah. And we do it, and people won't like this when I say it, but you just got to think it through. We do it 25 minutes scheduled after stand-up every day, right? So there's a number of benefits you get from that. The first is you're not going to a 4 or an 8 hour refinement or planning meeting. You're doing it every day, and it's in short increments. It's right after stand-up, so you're not interrupting a flow. You're all there already. The benefit then is that if a question, something unknown is talked about, rather than have people in the room all voice their opinion. I mean, you've seen this, right? You get into a room, should it be open Christmas Day? Oh, I don't know. I think it should be open from 9. You don't know. We've got to go back to the customer. So instead of discussing it and wasting time, you write it down on a red card. Someone takes ownership of that. And then we can bring it back to the next example mapping session, which won't be in 2 weeks' time, it'll be tomorrow. So we can keep that context in our mind.
So within an organization, then if they're really truly applying this, mm-hmm. right, they're doing example mapping, they're giving you a story, they're laying out examples, they're giving slides from and so forth. What is that look for them when it comes to greater maturity?
It unlocks total flexibility. You are not wasting time context switching, right? You are able to prioritize at fine granularity, because when you can see those rules, you can go, well, this one's a really difficult one to implement. The developer can say that. Can we push that back into the backlog? Is this something that you really need at this point in product development? So it gives the product side really fine tuning on what gets delivered, and that means you can do what you story mapping asks you to do, and what the traceability, the green threads have always said, we're going to do something really thin, and then we're going to build it out to get to make it what we want. And that then means you can stick to deadlines, because you say, we're going to deliver functionality in these areas. We do have deadlines. We've got to ship our product, right? So it gives you really good control over that, because you can deliver on your commitments as long as you don't commit on the fine detail. And if you're committing on the fine detail, well, you deserve everything you get.
Nice. Well, so tell us a little bit about your latest book.
Okay, so myself and Gashper Nodge, who's the creator of Specflow, the C# version of Cucumber, or the .NET version, we've been writing the BDD book series. And so we've written two books so far. First one is Discovery, came out a few years ago, and the second one was called Formulation. You see, it's the three things, and it came out last year. It's been well received. It's for sale on Amazon. It's for sale on LeanPub, and we've got our own website for the series called bddbooks.com. Who would have thought of it? Yeah.
So if people want to be able to learn more about this, maybe even bring you in to help to implement the concepts, how do they go?
So I'm on Twitter. I have a really complicated Twitter handle, Seb Rose. I'm on LinkedIn, Seb Rose. You can get me at seb.rose@smartbear.com, and you can come and stalk me if you like.
Sure. All right. Well, I tell you what, thank you so much for taking the time out of the conference to come here and talk to us about this. I think it's absolutely fascinating. I think that's an underrepresented area. We spent so much time with facilitation and product, things like that. It's an underrepresented place in time with people who aren't doing experiments, time to test out.
Yeah.
The actual items. So I'm really happy that you're here representing that. So thanks for coming and visiting us.
Thank you very much, Robert. You're fun.
You're very welcome. And thank you, everybody, for listening to the latest episode of Unlocking Agile, brought to you by Scrum Inc. Again, I'm your host, Bobby Woods, and I look forward to having you back next time.